Hello, everyone. It is June 2nd, 2020, and yesterday was a remarkable day in the history of the United States of America because you had a president who had peaceful protesters tear gassed off of the lawn of a church. Very famous church in Washington, D.C., so that they could get a photo op and basically say that they would use the military to deal with the protest. There's a problem with this. It's unconstitutional. The president had to actually go back, way back, over 200 years to find a law that actually does not apply to this situation. I think it was the Seditions Act that John Adams put into effect that, if I'm not mistaken, is been widely thought of as blatantly illegal and was subsequently, as far as I could tell, was supposed to be have been taken off the books, but maybe I was wrong about that. But the thing that bothers me the most is the fact that he is setting the stage right now for something a lot worse than what we've seen already. Now, I'm not going to excuse the rioting and the looting and all of that. That is obviously something that I'm not going to condone in the least, especially the looting, which, of course, there has been some video evidence and some photographic evidence and some compelling witness statements saying that this has been brought upon by white supremacists that are trying to invoke or provoke, I should say, a major confrontation, perhaps even a civil war. It's sad, but that's unfortunately the way we live in today, is that we have a situation right now where you would have sadly, hang on just a second. Okay, I had to put down a description right fast. So, for one of the, we'll go with that. Okay, back to what I was saying earlier. It's sad that we're going through this. It's really scary that you have the President of the United States, who should know better, and most certainly his advisors should know better, was to put the military into this whole conflict. It's one thing for the National Guard to try and contain this. They're trained to a certain degree about this. Not traditional U.S. military forces. They're not trained for something like this, because it's specifically stated in the Constitution that U.S. military forces are not to be used on American soil unless they are defending us against an enemy, a clear and present danger of an enemy from a foreign country, like an invasion. And what we're seeing here is mass protest of something that's been going on for a very long time. And as much as we like to pretend it's not really going on and all of that, it's really sad that you have people defending this. I saw this morning one of the professional wrestlers of the WWE in the NXT, I think it's the NXT brand, or was it SmackDown now, I think. They'd just gotten called up to SmackDown, and he was actually praising the president when even plenty of prominent conservatives are damning the president for what he said. And there are also some senators and congressmen and women behind the scenes that are trying to get the president to stop with his rhetoric. Well, it's not just stopping the rhetoric, it's stopping the whole kit and caboodle, because right now the president's rhetoric is scary enough. It's what the president's actions are going to be with this that's even more scary. I was not born until 1971, so I don't have any direct memories of 1968, but I do have memories of 1992 in LA when the riots hit after the Rodney King trial verdict came for the four officers charged in the beating of Rodney King. And when that verdict came down, the four white officers were found not guilty. LA blew up. There was mass rioting. For those of us who were alive back then and who have memories of it, it was a very scary time, and there were other riots in other cities. They just didn't get the news coverage back then. Speaking of the media, it is fair to say that the media has gone way overboard in broadcasting all of this. And one of these days, I'm going to have to do a podcast, a really comprehensive podcast about why the media, both on the mainstream, on the right wing and the left wing, are a lot of the reason why we have the problems we have today. And I'll talk about the 24/7 news cycle and how that's very, very dangerous. It seemed like a good idea back 40 years ago when Ted Turner launched CNN, but now it's become something even worse, And let's face it, social media. Let me take a moment to talk about social media for a second. And as much as I like to talk about how great it was when it first began, you got to talk to friends about your interest in all of this and got to find new friends from across the country and around the world and got to talk about cool stuff and all of that. What we've seen is it devolve into a haven for radicals on both sides, but especially the right wing. And that's the danger of all of this, is the fact that the president calls out Antifa, which is not even an organization per se. It's basically a group of organizations that are basically following a certain political path. This is not like the war on terror, when it was clear what President Bush meant by the war on terror. That was against groups promoting radical terrorism to support radical views of Islam, which the vast majority of Muslims, both here and abroad, reject overwhelmingly. This is far different than that. This is an attempt by the president, in my view, to paint anyone he disagrees with as part of Antifa. Which, for those of you who don't know what Antifa means, it stands for anti-fascist. Which is kind of interesting. Because 80 years ago, we were on the verge of sending our young men to go overseas to fight against fascists. And now, 80 years later, four generations later, we have a president who is supporting fascism by denouncing protesters of anti-fascism. Now, if you remember, oh, about a decade and a half ago, people used to call President Bush a fascist. And I, at the time, thought that was a rather, stupid thing to say. I do think there were people in his administration that had leanings toward that, but I don't think he himself, and I think most of the people that worked for him, didn't have that inclination. But I think if you look back at the history, it was not the people at the very top. It's the people near the top that had that. And now, if you look at the Trump administration, there are some that are really troubling, especially that Stephen Miller person who, yeah, that guy's scary indeed because, how far is he willing to go to support the president and the president's agenda, and how much will he condone? And that's the scary part about all of this. Now, let me first again, first off, talk about all the damage we've seen and all. There's no excuse for the rioting and or I should say the looting. The rioting I can kind of understand, but the truth is that right now more than ever we need to keep the protest peaceful as much as possible. But if it's true that there are political groups that are trying to take advantage of this, and on the right wing, they're trying to take advantage of this, like a white nationalist, people who are trying to improve the president's standing amongst the public, I guess. It's ridiculous. And this is an observation I was scared to think about last night. I was thinking about the president's little press conference in front of the church there, where he awkwardly held up a Bible for some reason. He didn't actually go into the church, didn't actually pray. He just went there and had his little photo opportunity. Is he enjoying this? Because there's part of me that wonders if he is. He's enjoying this chaos because he thinks it's making him look good. That he's battling against the bad guys, that he's battling against, that he's besieged by his political enemies, and that's going to give his, in his mind, his supporters the reason to rally the troops and all of that. It wouldn't be the first time politicians have used rioting by minority groups to advance their own political agendas. Nor will it be the last. It's really scary when you think about it. Now, it's one of those things, I don't have any solutions. I wish I did. I'm just basically trying, I'm hoping that things calm down very quickly. And that I know Biden's going to give a speech today in Philadelphia. I hope that helps calm things down to a certain degree. But I think there are some people who want this to continue on for a while because, in their mind, it'll help the president, when in fact it won't. It's kind of funny. Every once in a while, somebody will say, what would you be saying if you agreed with most of what President Trump, let's say President Trump were a Democrat, and you supported most of what he said, but he was doing it the way. First of all, I'd be not happy about the way he would be doing his achieving his goals this way. I think they would be there. It's not so much his policies I have a problem with, it's the way he is going about it. If you read his Twitter account, and I sometimes do, much to my chagrin, and you realize this guy is got issues. And I never imagined I'd actually have to say that about a president. I mean, yeah, Bill Clinton ran around on his wife. I'm sure there's probably more stories out there that we won't find out about until after he's dead and gone, like Kennedy. But the thing is, people knew about it and they voted him in anyway. Although I didn't vote for him in 92, I did vote for him in 96. The reason I didn't vote for him in 92 was I felt like he was too much for NAFTA. The reason I voted for him in 96 was I felt like he was doing a good enough job to keep the job. I felt like Ross Perot wasn't serious, and Robert Dole was basically a figurehead candidate. 92, at the time, I felt like Ross Perot was actually wanting to really change things. I felt like I thought he was serious at the time, and that's why I voted for him. Bush, I felt like, just didn't want the job anymore. He didn't look like he had the fire in him, and Bill Clinton, I didn't trust. Turns out I was right about him. The truth is, this is the first time I've actually really can't support a president at all. Bush, I supported on some things, especially after 9/11. I didn't in the Iraq War because I felt like he was well in the wrong there. There was plenty of evidence showing that Iraq didn't have nuclear weapons of mass destruction, and that we were being sold a pig in a poke, as the saying goes, by people who wanted a war in Iraq, and we found out now that was pretty much true. Although Bush will never admit it, because that would mean admitting the whole thing. You lost over 4,000 people for nothing. And no president wants to go down in history as waging a war for no good reason whatsoever. But the truth is that for the first time in my life, I can't support a president at all. I feel like he is not serving the interest of the American people. And I think that's been shown very, very bluntly lately. I don't think he understands the position that he's in. I don't think he understands his constitutional role as president. Otherwise, he would not have been calling for military force to be used in America against American citizens peacefully protesting. And yes, I understand he wants to put down the rioters and the looters and all that. That's understandable. But that's for the National Guardsmen to do, and that's because the governors have the lawful authority to send out the National Guard to prevent looting and to stem rioting and such. That's their constitutional that's in the law, basically. They can do that. The president can't. Not in the Constitution, as far as I know, and not in the U.S. Code of U.S. Code of Law, whatever you call it. We live in very difficult times, and I have to, for the first time, I really fear about the future of this country. I never would have imagined that, not even 5 years ago, I would be fearful for the future of the nation. Not even the darkest days of the Bush administration, when the Iraq War was going on and people were mad about it and all this, and after the Katrina catastrophe and all of that, my feeling was we'd always carry on. And my hope is we always will carry on. We may have to change course, fix things, fix mistakes, and all of that, but we always find a way to carry on. This time, I'm not so certain. I'm not so confident about that. And I wish I were. I really wish I were. But I'm not. And it's a very scary time that we live in. There is no such thing as black and white. Gray, there's a lot of gray area. We're dealing with people that have been mad as hell and aren't going to take it anymore for 400 years because of the oppression they've suffered. And they see us as regressing again, even further back down into the abyss of racism and bigotry and discrimination and all of that. Whereas not too long ago, they had hope that things would change for the better. But the truth of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, is that this kind of conflict is inevitable. There is a saying in physics, for every action, there's a equal and opposite reactions. Not entirely true in a sociological and a psychological sense. You can have actions that can have reactions that aren't quite as strong as the initial action. You can have actions that are far, that the reaction is far more stronger than the initial action. But in some ways, it's true. The election of Barack Obama in 2008 and his re-election in 2012 scared the old guard, the old rich white elite guard that wanted to keep things the way they wanted to keep them, because if you have had power for centuries, you want to keep that. And you may want to do it in ways that aren't necessarily good. And that's the scary part of all of this, is that, and let me stress, this isn't about bashing Trump. This is more than just Trump. This is something that's been going on for a lot longer than Trump ever dared think about being president of the United States. This has been building for a very long time. We've had systemic racism in this country pretty much ever since this country began. And we've never really fully addressed it in a way that solves the problem. Racism, in my opinion, is all about scapegoating. You've got a problem. You don't know how to solve it. You don't want to get blamed for it. You don't want to take responsibility for it. So you find a scapegoat. You find somebody that you can conveniently hang the cause of it for. Say the crops failed, and it was because of poor planning or the weather or something that was out of your control. Yeah, say you've got, this was 100 some odd years ago, and you've got black workers on your farm. Well, instead of taking responsibility for your actions or simply accepting the fact that the weather was out of your control and you couldn't do anything about it, you blame them. And in some cases, you let them go and get a whole bunch of new people, or far worse, you do violent things to them. You look at our history, and the thing about this country is, in general, we've done some great things. We've done a lot of amazing things. But we're far from perfect. We've done some things that are very, very bad. We've done some things that are, in hindsight, were very, very bad. And some of our policies have not done us well. Not just a group of people, but the entire country. Well, you could actually make an argument that part of the reason 9/11 happened was because we made a statement to be the world leader, and we stuck our nose in business that we didn't entirely understand, and we got it bloodied. Not saying we were at fault for 9/11, but you know, if you peek into the neighbor's yard and want to get in their business, don't be surprised occasionally if they don't like that and throw a rock through your window. That's a poor analogy, obviously. This is a whole geopolitical thing. You could go. I need to talk about this one time, about the 30th anniversary of Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait is coming up in a couple of months. I need to talk about this. As a matter of fact, it's exactly two months away from today is the 30th anniversary of it. So I need to talk about that real soon. But, you know, I don't know what more to tell you. It's been brewing in my head all night. I've about what to say and all of that. All I can tell you is that change is difficult. When you have a paradigm shift in history, when a major change happens, there is going to be chaos. There's going to be people who don't want that change to happen. even if it may be inevitable, they will resist it. But they can't resist it forever. The more we learn about each other, the more we learn about people around the world, the more we learn that, hey, the vast majority of Muslims are good people, not evil terrorists. The vast majority of black folks are perfectly fine, law-abiding citizens who are just as complicated. And the very small minority are the ones that are committing the crimes you think all of them are. And in general, and this is one thing I learned a long time ago. There's good people, bad people, and indifferent people. And the ratios between of those whites, blacks, what have you, generally are even. So, yeah. we're all human. And we suck. We do. I'm not the most fond person of humans right now because it's just... This is the 21st century, folks. We should be beyond this. We should be going to Mars, planning space colonies, exploring underneath on the ocean floor and all of this, and, you know, doing amazing things scientifically and technologically and all of this, and going, you know, having a wonderful time, and yet we're stuck in the dogmas of the past, still with this stupid idea that somehow or another God decided that, hey, white guys are the most rich, white guys are the most important people, they're the my chosen ones, so they get preferential treatment. And that ain't the case. We all know that. But some people want to keep it that way. Of course, I've learned a long time ago that people who hear the word of God and think God speaks to them sometimes have a funny feeling, funny way of that matching their own desires. They don't have a sudden conversion. Some do occasionally. George Wallace, for example. But most don't. So, yeah, we're in a bit of a bind here. Oh, by the way, there's still the pandemic going on. This happened at a perfect time, hadn't it? You know, we're going to see a major spike in cases in the next little bit. That second wave is coming around real soon. And all these plans by these sports leagues to open back up and all these plans that we had for businesses opening to back up. Yeah, I'm afraid we're going to have to shelve a lot of those plans, unfortunately. There's a line from an episode of Babylon 5 about dealt with the Markabs, an alien race called the Markabs and a Markab plague, the Scourge of Jaffa, or whatever it was, Plague of Jaffa. And basically what happened was the doctor that the Markab doctor was helping Dr. Franklin. This is on Babylon 5, by the way, if I didn't mention it before. He was trying to help prevent the plague from taking all of his people because it's spreading through them like wildfire. But the government didn't want to do that because they felt like it would be bring shame upon them and they'd be voted out the next elections. And the religious folks, the very religious folks, their versions of the evangelicals were thinking if they were stay faithful and stayed isolated from other people that the ghost of Jaffa or whatever it was, the plague of Jaffa wouldn't touch them. Well, it did touch them. They were all wiped out. Sound familiar? Yeah. I learned a long time ago that people can be our worst enemy. And by the way, the reason I bring that up is there's a line in that the Markab doctor says something along the lines of find the most reasonable solution and then do the exact opposite. Seems like we've been doing a lot of that lately. Well, I'm going to go ahead and call it a day for this show. And I hope you have a good day as best you can given the circumstances. Stay safe out there. Stay alert. Things can change in a heartbeat. I'm going to stay at home, although I think I got to go out for a little bit to do a couple of small errands. But other than that, I'm going to stay home and stay safe. I hope you folks have a good day. And as we like to say here, good night, good luck, and may the good news be yours.